Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.
Welcome back to the broadcast. I'm Father Matt Malone. Sitting in for Carrie Weber today is Ashley McKinless, who is an associate editor of America Magazine and the host of the Jesuitical Podcast.
That's correct.
Which you can find at americamagazine.org, the podcast of the young, hip, lay editors of America.
Yes.
Which is why I have not been interviewed yet for it.
You're on the list.
Okay, that's good. That's good. I think I have some. I might have some pull with the boss if you need to move me up the list. And we're also joined by J.D. Long Garcia, who is has just joined the editorial staff of America from the Archdiocese and Paper in Los Angeles and the Phoenix Sun as our senior editor. And in addition to his the customary duties of a member of the editorial staff, he is heading up a new initiative, which we are launching, looking at the Latina Hispanic experience in the United States, within the church, and also throughout the Americas. We should probably welcome to the broadcast Dr. Ashleen Menchaca Bagnullo, who has recently written an article for America called "I'm a Conservative Latina, Is There a Place for Me in Trump's Republican Party After Charlottesville?" which you can find at americamagazine.org. Dr. Menchaca Bagnullo received her Ph.D. in political science from the University of Notre Dame in the summer of 2013 with a primary specialization in political theory. And she is a native of South Central Texas and a 2004 graduate of Canyon High School and a 2008 graduate of Trinity University in San Antonio. Doctor, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
And what a great piece this was. It really opened my eyes and to, you know, the multi-dimensional reality that you personally confront, but also what's at stake in these debates for so many other people. I wonder if you might be able to let our listeners know what you said here and why you thought important to say it.
Well, first of all, I'm grateful to America for the opportunity to, give voice to this kind of opinion. And what I really wanted to communicate is that on the right, there's a way in which there's always been a tendency to have significant problems with race and racial identity. And I think in some ways that's why the GOP Southern strategy worked, right, when you're having this realignment earlier. But I think it became kind of out of control when Trump began to ascend in the primaries. And one thing that I noticed was that when I would try to discuss with other conservatives some of the things that Trump was saying and how I was receiving them and seeing them being received by some people on the right, there would just be disbelief in some cases, or they would say, well, it's not ultimately that big of a deal. And so part of what I wanted to communicate was, A, I wanted to show that there is a significant problem with race in the right and that it's coloring our policy proposals and during this administration in a lot of different ways. And also I wanted to show kind of the nuances of the experience of at least my experience as a Latina in the United States and the ways that Latinas and Latinos have contributed since the Southwest became a part of the United States to the fabric of the culture. I think a lot of times Latinos are depicted as being foreign to the culture, but people don't remember that they're a significant part of the culture and the history of America.
Yeah, and you're writing from experience. This is not, you don't have a theory that racism has become more of a problem since Donald Trump. You've seen it, and your family has experienced it. Could you talk a little bit about what you've actually seen?
Sure. I mean, I've seen it with my family and with my students. So when the primaries were happening in the election, and I was living in South Carolina, I was on a postdoc there, and I remember Trump you know, as soon as he's coming and he's giving his speeches and people are getting riled up for him, I remember the Confederate flags on my street, which hadn't been there before, started coming out. And people started driving, putting Confederate flags on their, like, actual flags, not stickers, on the back of their trucks as the South Carolina primary was happening. And, you know, I saw my sister not long after that. We were at Costco, and this woman wanted her to move, you know, so she could see something. And so my sister, you know, it wasn't necessary that she move, so she didn't move. So after this woman asked her to move, and my sister said, well, we can both be here, the woman hit my sister with her shopping cart hard. And she said, do you speak English? I told you to move. And my brother had an experience where he was walking down the street with a friend of ours who was black, and they were yelled at. They had food thrown at them by these people that were riding in a Jeep, and they kept coming back, circling them and telling them to keep curfew and calling them slurs. And not far from where we were living at the time in South Carolina, there was actually an incident that was on the national news because people went out in their trucks with the flags flying, and they crashed a young child's party that was happening on the front yard, an African-American child, and started threatening them and yelling slurs at them, and they were armed. And, you know, they ended up going to jail. But now when I think about what happened to my brother and his friend and these people cruising around, I think, you know, this could have been them in some way. And I see it, you know, in Texas, I grew up seeing it. And it's just confirmed. We had students that were spat on after the election, students who had their hair pulled, students who were told to go back to Mexico. I saw that. My sister, who works in education, saw that at her middle school. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, there are a lot of things that happen. I fear for my brother, for example. I one day he was leaving his job at the public library, and this man stood on the corner when he was leaving, and he made a gun sign with his fingers, and he started pretending to shoot my brother. And, you know, there's an active KKK chapter in town. There was a white supremacist rally flyer that was circulated, I guess, not long after the election. And things like that we used to be able to dismiss. We can't anymore.
Right. And you've definitely seen, these are horrific incidents. And has it been your experiences also that these have markedly increased over the last year or two?
Yes, they've increased markedly. And I think it's more open, right? Like, there used to be things that were more subtle that you might be able to say, well, I wonder if that was because of race. And you have this instinct that it probably is, but there's not enough there to really be like, yeah, it is. Here, look, this happened because of racial animus. But the instances where people are just blatantly racist have increased, you know, or even legally speaking, like when SB4 was happening, my cousin, well, SB4 was a law that was against sanctuary cities that was passed by the Texas legislature. And one of the things it permitted was stopping people and asking them for their papers, right? So some similarity to our PO's law in New Mexico. And my cousin, as soon as SB4 was passed, you know, he got pulled over. The officer said, your truck is nice. I want to see your papers, sort of to show, right, that he's a citizen. He wasn't doing anything. He wasn't driving in an odd way. He wasn't doing anything suspicious. But what SB4 permitted was, it permitted that to happen, right? For him, he's a citizen, and he was able to get pulled over because he was profiled as being someone who looked like they could be illegal. Right. And so that's another thing that's happening, too, is you see these moves in the law to make things that are not, you know, not giving equal protection of the law to citizens, to make them law.
Right. You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. We are talking with Dr. Ashleigh Manciaca Bagnolo about her article, I'm a Conservative Latina, Is There a Place for Me in Trump's Republican Party After Charlottesville?, which you can find at americamagazine.org and in the print edition of September 18, 2017. Doctor, you were telling us before the break that about these and the increasing number of these terrible incidents in which people have been targeted because of their race or suspected or ethnicity or their suspected immigration status, and a lot of that, you know, having come about or as a result of the sort of toxicity in our politics around these issues, some of which some would say a lot of which is coming from the Republican president of the United States, and yet you're a conservative member of the GOP, and so how do you respond to folks who probably in an uncharitable way say, are you part of the problem by being that?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. I mean, so I'm Catholic, which means that for me, there's not a political party that I can feel as if I have a comfortable home in. Because of the differences between, I think, kind of the seamless garment kind of position that we have on different life issues and different types of policies. When I began identifying as a conservative, it was as someone who sees the conservatives as working within a tradition of thought that tries to conserve older things while also responding to change. And so for me, part of what has become difficult in the rise of Trump is that I think, and I emphasize this in my article, look, we could talk about the immigration problem in terms of what we owe to immigrants because of their labor, or we could defend the right of cities to be sanctuary cities in terms of subsidiarity. Right, and police departments are saying we don't want to be sanctuary cities. There are resources like that that I think you could find. Another example might be, well, if the right is going to be arguing that the family is a fundamental unit of society and children need a mother and a father, why are you going to deport parents, right, of citizen children? Another argument would be, if the right is going to have this position on abortion, you know that they're going to argue that the child should not be aborted because of a choice that their parents have made, which is an argument you hear all the time. Then it makes no sense when they want to deport DACA kids, because DACA kids came here, often the case very young. There's not a way in which it's really volitional. They've made their life here. They identify with the American culture, and they contribute to American culture in a number of ways. I have a lot of DACA students. They're amazing. So I guess my response would be to say that there is something in the conservative tradition that can come up with, I think, a way of really responding to the question of immigration. But that's not the voice that is being heard right now. And one thing that's always bothered me about the right is the fact that there was never, it seems to me that there has never been an actual purging of the racist currents that you see. And in fact, for a long time, the right has lived right by throwing out dog whistles to different constituencies. And I felt like I want to fight against these tendencies. I want to make us confront these tendencies.
Yeah, I think that that's a great point, Ashleigh. In some circles that I've run, they talk about this concept of othering, so where you make mm-hmm. someone another, you know. And mm-hmm. so I think that that's something that's going on, as you say, with abortion, with the unborn child. There's an othering. There's a dignity, the human dignity is stripped away there. And also the same thing is happening with immigrants. And when you talk about DACA kids too, I think that there's some way in which the dignity is sort of being seen as not there anymore. So so I appreciate the way that you're making those connections, and I think that there's probably many listeners who also feel like they have a hard time when it comes to voting with parties and all that. The other thing that I think that I got really out of your article, and it's again available, it's a beautifully written piece, and I think it's worth taking for listeners to take their time reading it at americamagazine.org. But you also talk about this, what you mentioned about the family values that you bring and how you have that, how that informs you. And can you talk a little bit more about that, about how your family values that you inherited from your Latino family?
Yeah, that's a great question. So definitely there's been a huge emphasis on growing up on this idea that you need all the generations to work together to help the family to thrive and to love each other and to learn from each other and to prioritize the family relationship. I see in my students here, oftentimes they confront the question of, well, I moved 3 hours away from Houston, or I moved from the Valley, you know, which is about 5 hours, and I really miss my family, or my mother's going into surgery, and I want to go home. And those are the kinds of things that when I was deciding where to go to undergraduate, I was like, I am not leaving within an hour's drive of being able to go home to my family. And I see my students grappling with similar sorts of questions. There's a way in which they're pursuing their degree here makes them feel like, how can I keep up the family intimacy and really be there for them in a way that I think that's an important question to ask. It can't be dismissed. And I think too often these students, people will just say, well, you've got to go to improve yourself. But there's a way in which their concern's not taken seriously.
Mm-hmm. Is there a time where you think the Republican Party has embodied those values, and how would you say it could get back to that point?
So, I mean, with any tradition, there's always the fact that the difference between the aspiration and the action is there. I think that one thing that all of this has shown me is that I don't know if there's a time that I would want to return to, but I think that there's the framework for being able to say, hey, let's talk about the family is a foundational unit of society, is something that we want to protect. Let's talk about the ways that we can support families. And let's talk about this idea that there's a sexual morality that we should aspire to that is good for human beings. And I think a lot of people have done that in the past, but of course there's always been the problem of hypocrisy, which has always been one of the difficulties that afflicts conservatives, I think, for two reasons in the American context. One is that recently, you know, at least recently in terms of history, right? History, it's not so recently, you know, if we just think of current events, but the Republican Party is the one that's most openly aligned itself with the Christian religion. And with that comes the inheritance of, right, the morality of the Christian religion. And this has proven in some ways to not be good, because every time they miss the mark on it, which is often, it makes Christians look hypocritical. And I think the other problem is that you've got the fact that especially people who will embrace a certain type of traditional sexual morality, a lot of times very publicly, they don't meet it, or they promote conditions that, I guess, well, like JD was saying, that other people. So, you know, when you think about women who get pregnant out of wedlock, there are a lot of great places that will support those women. But a lot of times you'll hear those women talked about in really disgraceful ways.
Yeah.
So I think I would think if they're going to continue to talk about the family or talk about sexual morality in these ways, that all of us on the right would really need to confront some of the major practical and theoretical issues there.
So none of what you have experienced or witnessed over the last year or two has made you reconsider your kind of position on the ideological spectrum. It sounds like what your response to this actually comes from your political philosophy as well as your faith.
Yes, that's true. I would add that there are people who can draw on the resources of other traditions to be able to find some relationship to their faith. I mean, since I'm a political theorist, I don't find a lot there in terms of being able to make political or theopolitical arguments in the progressive tradition. But, you know, there could be someone who can do it, and there's the huge problem of hypocrisy that is being dealt with on the right. I mean, I wouldn't say I haven't questioned it. I mean, some of the people that I know who I feel live the best kind of Christian life are people who are coming out of this conservative milieu. But you see in all of them this kind of recoiling at what Trump represents on the right. And I mean, last election, I registered with the American Solidarity Party, and I knew quite a few people who did that as well.
Thank you for that. It seems like we want to have one way of looking at things or another. Or like in this country right now, we want to just have one point of view. Just looking forward, what would you say? What would you say is our what's your main hope for the Conservative Party?
And you have about 1 minute, Doctor.
Sure. I mean, my main hope would be that the Catholics and the Conservative Party, you know, look at what Catholicism teaches us about politics, and that they're a source of renewal in the Conservative Party, and that causes them to question alliances that they've made and maybe positions that we've been too glib about, or that we real problems that are being posed to us that we haven't mounted yet a right. good enough response to. I think Catholicism would be the way to look at things.
Well, you won't
and get, that can be appropriated left or right.
You'll get no argument from me on that. The piece is called I'm a Conservative Latina. Is there a place for me in Trump's Republican Party after Charlottesville? You can find it at americamagazine.org. It's by Dr. Aisling Menchaca-Bagnullo. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And we should mention that this is actually the cover story for the issue of September 18th, 2017. Mm-hmm. And it has a beautiful treatment on the cover.
Yes. As our art department always does.
Yeah, indeed. We have a great creative director. The team just keeps building, which is nice. JD, it's been great to have you with us this week.
I think it's great to be here.
And we'll be sure to have you back, it's, though you're going to be very busy so in the years ahead. You've been listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. To learn more about all of the issues that we've talked about today or to read the articles that we have mentioned, you can go to americamagazine.org. You can also follow us on Facebook and on Twitter. I'm at America Editor on Twitter. And to subscribe to America Magazine, call 1-800-627-9533. That's 1-800-627-9533 for a smart Catholic take on faith and culture. For Ashley McKinless and J.D. Long Garcia, I'm Father Matt Malone. Thank you and good day.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.